everyone. Welcome. It's so nice to see so many of you. It's also great that the weather didn't necessitate us to, you know, pile up and pile up. Before we introduce our speaker today, actually, Gail has some announcements, so let's start with that.
Okay, I just have two groups of people to introduce. I don't know if they're here, but there are a lot of staff who are new or returning to CUL since June, so if I call your name, forgive me if I massacre the pronunciation of your name, but maybe just stand up. So new since June, Shane Hutchinson and Matt Ryan at Mann Library. Chris Westling. No, Chris. I'm not taking attendance. I am Anthony at Law. No, and Ellie Kramer at Mann. Jim Blake at Mann. Erica Rennis at Mann. Rebecca Youngs at Mann, and Cheryl Barreto at ILR.
She hasn't started yet.
Okay.
She's still in Hawaii.
Oh, we'll do better with this next group. Since last Library Forum event, the Career Development Committee has been appointed, so we'd like to introduce those folks to you. So any Career Development Committee people, if you're here when I call your name, please just wave or stand up. So Boaz Nadef-Mains, Pete Magnus, Aisha Prather, Evelyn Ferretti, Leah Sala, Neely Tang, Lynn Titchener. And thank you all for agreeing to serve on this committee.
Well, hello again, and it's a great pleasure to introduce to you our speaker, my colleague Dean Kraft, who has been the chief technology strategist at the library since July 2008. It's a totally uncharted territory, so and it is an easy introduction because Dean's talk is about his job. But let me give you some background information about him. Before Dean joined the library, he was the director of IT at Computing and Information Science at Cornell. And actually, in addition to his job as the director of IT, he also was the TI on several digital library projects. And actually, when he left, his last leadership position was with the National Science Digital Library efforts. And Dean actually continues to have a role and with CIS, and he holds a part of a portion of his position as the senior research associate at CIS. Dean has an undergraduate degree from mathematics, and he got his PhD in 1981 at Cornell. So I guess we can consider him a real Cornelian and a real Ithacan. And I'll turn it over to Dean.
Okay. We'll see if the technology works here. Maybe yes, maybe no. Maybe no. Okay, we'll go with this one. what does a chief technology strategist actually do? As I mentioned, I'm currently trying to figure that out making it up as I go along. So I'm going to talk about both some sort of general challenges that the library faces and some of the sort of specific projects that I'm working on that relate to those challenges. So what does a chief technology strategist do? Helps the library manage the disruptive transition to digital tools and resources. Okay, that was easy. Any questions? All right, so the rest of this talk will be explaining what that means, and talking about why it's fairly hard. So in the physical world, as you all know, the library really was at the center of scholarly activity for many, many disciplines. And the digital transition really challenges this position. Here's a nice quote from Peter Brantley, former head of the Digital Library Federation. So the library is an institution engendered over the past few millennia to provide gatekeeping to scarce physical resources is reaching a terminus in its life cycle. So where does the library go from here? The library technology environment overall is a pretty complex one. There are an awful lot of pieces that are relevant to deciding what we need to do. In addition to being highly complex, it's one that's constantly changing. That's the mythical Apple Isolate, which may be announced in 2 weeks. So why do we need a chief technology strategist? Several reasons. We're looking for somebody to understand and track the constant and really explosive changes in CS, in information science, and IT. I think Anne was looking for an informed, high-level advocate for necessary change within the library. The library needs a credible partner to work with central IT here on campus, external partners, and funding organizations to enable change to meet these challenges. And what I need to do is to be out there synthesizing all these pieces to create new opportunities for the library. So I wear a number of hats, not actually that one, which is the Cal's Dean hat, but this is sort of a, gives you some sense of the scope and balance of my responsibilities. So my primary focus is sort of on the library change issues. I'm a member of a number of committees regarding that, and I'll talk about some of those during the talk. I'm a library representative to a number of outside organizations. I am actually 33% supported on and working on sponsored research, including VIVO, which I'll talk about, DataNet, and the Fedora repository project, a small component there. And about 10% of my time, very roughly, is IT focus. I'm the library representative of the IT Managers Council and the Faculty Advisory Board for IT. I am going to talk about some of the academic technology issues and planning as well. So, challenges. The library is facing a number of challenges, and here are a few of them. We'll start with some big jargony words talking about disruption. Unbundling, disintermediation, commoditization, and consumerization. And I'll talk about the academic technologies challenge and what I see the library's role in that potentially being. Talk about the issues of preserving digital scholarship and culture. And then I'll talk about sort of leveraging our skills, strengths, and trust to create the services we're going to need in the decades ahead. So looking at the first one, what do some of these words mean? Unbundling, we're talking about the disruption of vertically integrated business models. A classic example is newspapers, which are in the classified advertising, dead tree printing, and news gathering business. And unfortunately, the classified advertising, which was essential to their funding model, went away. And we're going to look at unbundling issues for the library. Disintermediation, the elimination of intermediaries, and Power Records isn't around anymore. There are a number of areas where the digital disruption is really pulling intermediaries out and throwing them out of business. Commoditization, issues where price is the only significant factor in a product. Look at Amazon and iTunes. And the last one is kind of interesting, consumerization. So these are technology solutions that have been being developed and delivered to the masses, which impact the services the library provides. We can either, you know, make use of them. In some cases, they may compete with us. In any case, we need to interact with them. So start with unbundling. For libraries, really, for a long time, we were in the business of processing physical books and journals. And we need to decide you know, we did a bunch of other things around that as well. But we need to see what's strategic and what we can, what we do going forward. So identify our critical strategic services. We really need to sort of unbundle ourselves. We need to figure out what are our, where can we provide the best value and deal with these issues before it's done to us and before people like Peter Brantley dismiss us as merely a repository of physical materials. So one of the issues with unbundling is looking at our fellow research libraries. Where do we compete? What are we providing? How do we compare with our peers in this area? We used to compete with ARL statistics over the physical holdings. We could compete over subscriptions. We have, you know, can we find the money to subscribe to more things than other people? Scholarly communications is changing that landscape. We're continuing to compete over special collections, and I'll talk more about unique resources. And I think one of the main places we're going to compete is over the quality of unique services that we're offering to scholars and faculty here at Cornell. There's also an opportunity for us to unbundle ourselves by collaborating. So we can, I think we have to collaborate over things like physical and digital holdings. We're already doing some of that now. We already have to collaborate over open access services and publications, things like the Open Access Compact that we've been working on with other institutions. There are other areas where we could collaborate. I'll talk about web and data curation in a bit. So with digital surrogates available for browsing and discovery, we can easily deliver physical from an offsite storage. We've talked at times about making the library annex a combined book storage for other other institutions, and other institutions have combined physical holdings in similar shared storage facilities. I think we still need to do the same thing in digital holldings with projects like HathiTrust that act as a large combined digital store for a bunch of materials from a large number of partners. And we also need to work to help sort of create collaborative solutions rather than doing it all ourselves. In particular, we're working with ArtStore on a project called Shared Shelf. I'm the Cornell liaison to this ArtStore partnership. It includes the Society of Architectural Historians, Harvard, Yale, NYU, University of Miami, University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign, Colby College. And ArtStore is really taking the lead on this and doing the implementation, but we're providing significant input on the design of the system for visual resource management and delivery. It has a number of advantages for us. We don't have to create or buy a new different metadata and workflow system to replace Luna. Although I should say we are paying money to ArtStore as part of the hosted service agreement. Another advantage, it allows faculty to use a common externally hosted system for all their teaching images. They're already using ArtStore for the number of the images that it provides now, and this lets them combine that with images from Cornell. And the partnership really leverages the expertise of a bunch of institutions in designing this system, which is an advantage for us. We aren't on our own and are able to count on others to help us figure out the appropriate metadata, workflow, authentication, backend systems, all those problems. So, collaboration as competition. One thing we can do is really build on collaborative opportunities to offer better services to people at Cornell. So BarDirect is a nice example of where a collaboration is really a competitive advantage. Too Cool, the Cornell and Columbia Library Partnership, is looking at opportunities for deep integration and an ability then to share and sort of partially unbundle some of our vertically integrated services. So I'm one of the leads on the technology infrastructure piece of Too Cool, and we have four areas that we're looking at right now. The one that we're moving ahead on most immediately is really a common Fedora-based preservation repository. Sidian Warner is leading the team that's looking at this, specifications, requirements, and development for that, in collaboration then with Columbia. Web curation services there. Columbia has a service there, and Cornell is actually starting to do pilots to take advantage of that. Electronics records management archiving. They also wound up taking over the university archives responsibility, and we have common interest in that over the long term. And finally, looking at common discovery tools. So, disintermediation and commoditization is another sort of disruptive influence that's really challenging the library. The challenge to move away from mediating things that are being provided directly by others and dealing with the things that are being provided as commodities. So many books, if the Google Book settlement goes through, many books will be available directly from Google or from other electronic sources, not necessarily mediated by the library. We no longer hold a number of journals. We still take some responsibility for them, and I'll talk about that a bit in the preservation piece. But we're really just sort of a broker for electronic distribution. We no longer have all those intermediate parts. In our special collections, we have an opportunity. We aren't the brokers. We can't easily be disintermediated. And we need to think about how to build on these kinds of capabilities. We also have systems like archive.org, where we're sort of a first mover in this area. We hold a unique resource that has much greater use outside Cornell than inside, but we really need to work to solve this sort of shared open access issue. It's either that or we're going to wind up sending all our money to Elsevier. I think among the research universities and other providers of this kind of information, we need to figure out how to share out the scholarly communication space. We don't actually have to just build collections. We can also create unique resources. The Insight service is pointing out to law library websites or law resources that are all over the world, but the sort of curation and selection has been done by law librarians to provide this unique capability, which again is widely used outside of Cornell as well as within. So, consumerization and concentration. So we need to think about how we can integrate with and take advantage of consumer-level services and the concentrated attention that goes with them, as well as to meet expectations that people have when they use consumer services. If they're accustomed to going to Google and getting that kind of response, we're challenged to provide services that are as easy to use and understand as a service like Google Search. So we've done some pilots on this. The Library Outside the Library group has piloted moving collections to Flickr and taking advantage of all the sort of attention that comes with it, getting tagging, getting recognition, getting visibility outside of our resources. So, and it relates to really a broader issue. How do we make sure that our information resources are discoverable and accessible, both by faculty people within the institution and by those outside? It's a bigger issue. We really need to make sure that our resources are part of the interrelated context of the web. If people are doing research, they're not just focusing on things that come from the Cornell Library. They need to focus on all the materials that are out there, and we need to put our stuff in that larger context. There are lots of information resources here that we have responsibility for. We deliver to our users. We have a number of problems right now with discoverability over these sets of resources. Both the things that we hold locally and the externally hosted services that we take advantage of. It's not just what we hold as well, it's what we pay for. We have a huge number of licensed databases, journals, images, books, reference works, many things. And we, right now, we use a really bad federated search service to provide very limited discoverability and access to those databases. We need to come up with a better discovery and access solution. You know, do we want to count on Google Scholar actually indexing all of these things? It can be kind of opaque about what it is that they really do and cover. We're looking at Summon and some other similar services that purport to integrate the library catalog with journals and databases and potentially other local sources of information. And the third possibility, and we've talked about this with Columbian internally, is can we build a system that would let us create a sort of uniform discovery and access layer over all of these resources, both the things that we license, the things that we hold, and the things that have important resources that are hosted externally. If we can do this, I think this is potentially an exciting project because it allows us to do organization, annotation, and other capabilities on top of in this sort of discovery layer that we're building over the resources themselves. So it has some interesting opportunities associated with it. So in addition to the sort of disruptive forces of the outside world, we have an issue within Cornell on how to deal with academic technology issues. Academic technologies covers a wide range of things, public computing, digitization, the course management system. It's a range of tools and services that are really essential for modern teaching, learning, and research. Within the university right now, it's divided. The central IT group provides the sort of IT and infrastructure focus. The library really has a scholarly focus and looks to the scholarly side of the academic technology tools and services. In addition, to complicate the landscape, there are research centers with these sort of narrow, deep service focuses, things like CISER, Center for Advanced Computing. And we have the sort of more local service providers at both the college and departmental level. So it's a complex environment. I like to sort of spread it out over a graph looking from the general to the specialized and then from the IT to the scholarly. And I see the library's piece really as this chunk. And it depends how you draw it in the bottom right there. We provide scholarly services and we are more a general purpose service. We're not doing the really sort of specialized disciplinary specific or research area specific tools and services. So who does what? We have an opportunity right now to sort out what happens in the middle in this boundary between IT and scholarship. You know, at every institution, it's been different. Things evolve over time. It actually tends to frequently happen due to personalities as the librarian or the CIO or the whatever in the institution as to how things have been divided up. We really have an opportunity now as part of this strategic planning process to step back and look at, you know, what is the best thing for the institution? How can we best provide these services and from where? You know, institutions have tried a number of different things. no surprise, fully merging IT in the library has generally not been that successful, and research level places that have tried to do that have wound up unwinding that effort. So I was co-chair of an academic technology subcommittee report on IT strategic planning. We did a preliminary sort of analysis of the landscape and delivered our report to the IT Governance Council in November. There were several recommendations out of that report. One was to create an, you know, to improve the collaborative environment, to create an academic technology support council that would draw in all of these players and make sure that there was good collaboration and work together. We thought it was important to provide a single help desk service that would, you know, be the place people could go for any kinds of academic technology or other administrative infrastructure services. You don't want a student or faculty member trying to figure out, you know, do I have an academic technology problem or is this an infrastructure problem? You want them to send them to one location where they can then channel the request to the right organization to deal with. And we suggested that there should be a central service and support web portal that provides clear points of entry for all the wide range of academic technology services across the institution. Interesting notes from the report itself. At the moment, CIT and the library actually put about equal full-time equivalent effort into supporting Cornell-wide academic technology services, so it's a roughly even division. There are currently overlaps in services and opportunities for much better coordination and service delivery. And the third thing we observed was that in any scenario, both organizations will have some level of academic technology responsibility. Wherever you sort of draw the line, we're going to have a piece of the scholarly academic technologies and they're going to have a piece of the IT. So the next steps here, Anne is meeting with Steve Schuster this afternoon to start discussions. The charge from the provost is that the library should work with CIT and the IT Governance Council to address the provision of academic technologies at Cornell. So I'll be moving ahead on that. What I see the library really needs to provide in this area and can provide in this area is disciplinary understanding and expertise. We need to have full awareness and engagement with the modern IT tools and services. We need to incorporate our raison d'etre, which is ensuring access to and long-term preservation of the cultural and scholarly record. And we need to work in close collaboration with IT experts. So the next challenge, preserving digital scholarship and culture for Cornell and the world. Small challenge. So I'll talk about a couple of aspects of this. Dealing with diffuse information sources, potentially curating the web, and living with and in the developing cloud, which has a lot of potential definitions. Really, preserving the bits is the least of our problems, although even that is a significant problem. It used to be easy for the library. We, you know, subscribed to the magazines or newspapers in print, on microfilm, or through a subscription database, and, you know, get Portico to back it up, whatever, we're in good shape. But these are bad times for print-based newspapers, as I already mentioned. People are going elsewhere for their news and also elsewhere for their culture and interest. So Jezebel is the site my daughter at college directed me to. It's where she goes when she wants to find out what's happening in the world she's interested in. And there are, you know, thousands, hundreds of thousands of blogs and information sources out there on every subject. So how do research libraries preserve news, journalism, and culture when it gets fragmented into a million pieces across the web? We can't just subscribe to a simple set of sources and know that we're covering what needs to be covered. we're in the business of providing scholars what they need 20, 50 years from now. How do we make sure this is going to happen? One answer is looking at web curation. We curate physical materials, you know, all the time. Shouldn't we be looking at discipline-based selection and archiving of web-based and digital cloud materials? There are some initial pilots here. Human rights websites at Columbia, Women's Blogs at Harvard. The California Digital Libraries also has a web curation service that they've put up. And we have to ask who is responsible for doing this. You know, the Internet Archive is going out and archiving an awful lot of things now. So is Google, Library of Congress, us. The web is a scary place to work in. There are lots of issues with privacy, with digital rights management, with intellectual property issues. We need to learn to live in or with this cloud of information. Cloud storage, computing, and applications have lower cost, better service, and a smaller carbon footprint. That means we're likely to be moving toward using cloud services. Scholars, the faculty, are going to do what they want, which means they're going to happily go off and use Google Docs or anything else. And we need to figure out how to work with them in this, the environment where they're taking advantage of those services. And how do we balance then the core library values against the business values and pressures? Nice Lost in the Cloud op-ed from Jonathan Zittrain. If you entrust your data to others, they can let you down or outright betray you. And it, as everybody might suspect, data stored online has less privacy protection, both in practice and in law. There may need to be some legal changes. Hopefully Peter is on the case, helping address some of these issues. With legislatures and others. So, right now, I think everybody is mostly counting on the Internet Archive to preserve snapshots of the historical web. You know, is this an organization that's really going to outlive Brewster Kahle? Google is another possibility, but Google may not always be the same company with the same values it is today. That's an issue we have to deal with. As probably many of you know, Amazon deleted copies of Orwell's 1984 and Animal Farm off of owners' Kindles. It did refund their money, and it afterwards promised not to do it again. You know, more interestingly, they might have slipped a new version in. You know, Eurasia and East Asia have now switched roles in the in the latest version that's been automatically installed on your. On your Kindle. So even if disruption is coming to research libraries, which of these organizations would you bet will still be around 100 years from now and capable of preserving information going ahead? So last of the challenge areas, leveraging our skill, strength, and trust to create services for the scholars of 2020 and beyond. This is not intended to be a complete list. We have disciplinary expertise. That's one of our strengths. We have training in selection and curation of materials. We have an understanding of how to describe and organize information, things like Ferber, metadata, ontologies. We have an ability to recognize the unique needs of researchers and scholars and students and create new tools, services, and solutions. That's part of being on this bridge between the information sources and information technology and the disciplines, and having that sort of common understanding. And last, you know, we have a long and trusted organizational history. Now, it's not clear to everybody that it should be the library that continues in this role. Quoting Peter Brantley again, from a campus-wide perspective, fundamental components of campus library and technology organizations need to be surgically extracted from their current hosts and combined in a new data system support unit the goal of enhancing information access, handling, and interactivity. Is that the right answer or not? So he was speaking specifically to data curation there, although I think he meant that broadly in terms of research data and many data sources. The NSF DataNet project actually challenged institutions to integrate library and archival sciences with computer and information sciences to develop a common solution for handling research data. The goal is to combine data from a bunch of different disciplines to address grand challenge problems like climate change. You know, right now, disciplinary data sets are all over the map. It's a Tower of Babel. You know, there are no few to no common languages among them. The Data Conservancy is a project, and I'm the sort of library lead on this, working with Johns Hopkins to, under the NSF DataNet funding proposal, to look at this problem and to try and create a common infrastructure where you can put together data sets from different areas and extract common information from them. So both DataStar and Archive actually have deliverables as part of this project. I'm more involved with the DataStar one. Simeon's taking the lead again on the Archive involvement. So we're looking for, by this September, to create a deposit of research data sets from DataStar into the Data Conservancy to create the capability to do that, to pilot some of the existing data sets or new ones that we would add, and extend the sort of metadata and ontology framework to match up with the Data Conservancy project needs. And then finally, to broaden DataStar to support additional disciplines and improve DataStar integration with the semantic web. More broadly, I think it is important for the library to be in the business of supporting e-research, to worry about preserving primary digital data, ensuring fixity, security, and recoverability, developing the ontologies and metadata mappings, taking advantage of our skills and capabilities in those areas, and working to pull order and information from them. So we're also bringing library strengths to respond to other unfilled needs. DEVO project is was started at Cornell by John Carson Reichert quite a while back. It was recently funded by the National Institutes of Health to do a much broader effort in connecting scientists together, creating this national network of scientists. And we're taking advantage of semantic web technologies, integrating with the web of data, this linked open data effort. It's a large group of people here, where you heard some of the new names that Gail was announcing of hires at NAM. A bunch of those are actually DEVO project hires, and you know, involves a bunch of institutions, including Weill Cornell. So quickly, what is DEVO Web? It's information regarding scientists' interests, activities, and accomplishments, and then a set of software tools that let people discover collaborators and related efforts. It's designed to support the acceleration of team science, improve the visibility of information about science, and improve competitiveness. And we're building this institutionally hosted information network of, taking institutional sources of authoritative information about scientists and what they do, and using that to create these interrelations. So, summarizing. So in my hiring talk, I made several specific recommendations to the library, and here's a quick update on them 18 months later. I suggested that it was important to put the library into our users' workflow. And as I see that now, I think we need to figure out what the right level of library-provided academic technology support is and work to do that well. We need to ensure that all the materials we hold and pay for are easily discoverable and accessible. We need to, and that includes really integrating them with the web. We need to get them out there into the context of the other materials that are out there and available. And finally, I think we need to take some risks to match library services to new technologies, things like mobile, things like Kindle delivery or Apple iSlate or whatever. These are potentially sort of strategic long-term issues for the library, and I think we do need to engage in them. We need to mediate Cornell's unique access to everyone. Talked a lot about the research data efforts, and we need to move ahead with that in efforts like DataStar and the Data Conservancy. Will we integrate Cornell's digital assets with the web and leverage TooCool and other consortial efforts to share the cost and build the best solutions for making our materials available in a cost-effective way, not necessarily trying to do everything ourselves. We need to enable creating unique context and organization. So this is a change from my hiring talk. The Cornell community can help to create context and organization, but it, really this is a global issue. For any particular discipline, you need to have a much broader involvement to create value. So VivoWeb is an opportunity to build such a web-scale system for research and scholarship to tie its publications, citations. We also have to look at other opportunities. We have here archive.org, which is a global, globally visible and widely used system. And we need to take advantage of systems like that that have this global reach and impact and figure out how to take advantage of them. And as you can see, one physicist who shall remain anonymous feels that perhaps archive is the only thing from the current infrastructure in the library that will be around in 2030. The last thing I recommended is be a trusted broker. We have a unique ability, I think, and obligation to preserve the scholarly and cultural record. As a broker, we can help ensure privacy of access to important and controversial knowledge. And we need to be a partner in efforts with other trusted organizations. Potentially the TooCool effort, HathiTrust, and others. So Apple, Amazon is putting a lot of information intermediaries out of business. Let's not become extinct. To figure out how we can make unique contributions. So Cornell University Library in 2020, my predictions. The growth in library resources and services will have been mostly digital, and physical materials will primarily be accessed as digital surrogates. Librarians will be the bridge between disciplines and the unique digital tools and services that they need. The library will be more specialized, providing some global services locally and drawing on consortial partners and outside services for others. And we'll just be completing the upgrade to Voyager 9.1. So the last, it may sound a bit flippant, but we will still be doing a number of production things that are going to be continuing to be important even 10, 20, or 30 years from now that we're doing today. So we need to figure out what are the sort of strategic services the library needs to be providing in support of scholarship in this new cloud of digital tools, information, and services. And it's an interesting challenge for us. So, that's all. Any questions?
Challenges, you talk about four challenges about some of the Central Library has
yep.
as far as providing services to scholars, and not only physical, but a few other things.
Yep.
So you've been in the library 18 months, you can't come outside the library. What are some of the weaknesses? What are some of the areas that are challenging to us in terms of being able to meet those areas?
The easiest one to answer is the ability to move quickly at all. You know, there's a lot of inertia in the library and a lot of conservatism. And in some ways, that's a really good thing. I mean, it's why we're a trusted organization. It's why, you know, people are going to count on us still being around 100 years from now. But in a very dynamic and quickly changing environment, we need to do both. I mean, I think efforts like the library outside the library, the LOL group, are excellent. We need ways to do things in a lightweight way that can happen quickly and fail or succeed quickly, and then, you know, if they succeed, that we can fold them into the broader sort of production effort. So there's the quick answer. I think the other thing is, and this is really an evolution toward a stronger understanding of digital tools and services and what's out there and the capabilities. And I do see that happening within the library. I don't know exactly what my expectations were coming in, but certainly I've been impressed by the extent to which those capabilities are available within the library already and are growing. John.
So, Dean, we've been reminded in the past couple of months by certain faculty members that they feel like they have an understanding of what the library should be doing that may be perhaps different from the vision of the students.
Yes. Hope there aren't any faculty. Or advantage faculty.
And particular, I think what strikes me is it's not so much talking about the technology per se, but the outward and global orientation of the way we look, which I mean, we hear a lot from younger faculty. From some of the older, more established faculty or some of the senior fields. So how do we reframe that?
I'm not sure that was in the CTS job description. It's a good point and a good question. I mean, you know, clearly, I mean, there's the physicists who said, only archive is the only important thing you're doing. So I think there are answers from all of the map on that in terms of what the faculty see and provide. I mean, we have people in information science and other areas who are counting on the library as partners for some of these more global outward-facing efforts. Maybe we can get the faculty to listen to each other. I don't know the extent to which we can encourage those who do see these new areas as important to speak to the ones who are more traditional in their focus. You know, I think everybody agrees we certainly, you know, we are the sort of laboratory for the humanities, and we need to make sure that we're meeting those faculty needs. Although I think, you know, those faculty needs are going to evolve. It's, you know, the Kindle may not be the, you know, deep reading device yet, but I sincerely believe within the next 10 years we're going to have a physical device that can, you know, mimic enough of the sort of affordances of a book that people will start using it that way. And you know, there'll be this sort of shift in everybody's belief at that point. We'll see. Yeah.
I'm struck by how much of what you described has at least as much to do with business models and management and administration as it does with technology. I'm just wondering if you expected that. And if you didn't expect that, does that suggest anything that, I don't know, other ways we need to be thinking about these issues?
Well, I think, you know, being, I mean, this may have been bludgeoned on me by circumstance. I might have been much more carefree about the business model aspect if the last 18 months hadn't played out the way they did. We can't, you know, in this environment, it's tough to even carve out a little space where we can sort of think freely and openly about the possibilities. for the library going ahead without being, you know, defined and constrained by the financial realities and business environment. I think we do need to do that, you know, but then we're going to need to come back and say, okay, what can we realistically hope to accomplish? And how do we make the case for these other things?
I guess I wasn't thinking just of our own models, but in that we sort of have to understand where Elsevier is going and where
yes.
people are going, and
that
kind of forecasting and understanding also. It's not.
Yep. No, it isn't. It isn't just our own. You're right. I mean, it's a very complex environment in all sorts of dimensions, not just the technology. And the technology succeeds or fails. I mean, you know, we had an opportunity to buy a whole bunch of Kindles and use them as textbooks. You know, that would not probably have been successful. Places that tried it, you know, it didn't work out well. It's an awful lot of things together. Yeah.
Also, with collaboration, I'm thinking also just for now, the one model you had, IT dealing with email.
Yep.
And I'm thinking of the historical part of email, too, when you're not having it.
Yeah.
Also, so I think a lot of what was, when this kind of budget mind is the way we are, we become sort of, we're all trying to push our own way, we're sort of territorial, and I think that collaboration.
Yeah, I mean, I was obviously in that context, I was thinking of providing the email infrastructure and not necessarily preserving the information long term. I certainly don't think there's anybody at this point who would argue the library should be running their own mail system. That's not the business we want to be in, but on the other hand, the electronic records piece is critical, and I think that wasn't on there. It certainly could have been. Yeah. I mean, and I certainly, the electronic records management is an important part. It's huge.
And whether it comes, it'll be essentially. But again, we have a role. I think that's collaborative.
We do have a role. And, and as I said, the problem is, if it was just the university, that would in a way be simple. But as faculty start using Google Wave or others of these services, what is our responsibility to preserve stuff out of that? We need to somehow address that and figure out what's possible, what we should be doing. Peter.
Dean, is there a technology that is on the horizon that that has the potential to radically change what we do and that we're not paying enough attention to now? It's the web of 20 years ago or the Google of 11 years ago or...
I don't know. We're seeing things like, depending on what the Apple tablet delivers, it could radically change the delivery of something. News, movies, I don't know. And I maybe we'll find out a little more in 2 weeks on that one. More broadly, I'm not aware of anything that I would say is a sort of sleeper thing, but that may be my ignorance and lack of understanding. It's very hard to predict what's going to be game changing 10 or 20 years from now. Anybody here have an answer? Sure.
Where you are in the world is connected with the media.
that beginning to happen through terminology, connection, you know, really well classified or through relationships of context.
I mean, certainly augmented reality is a possibility. It's already fairly well up the height curve now, although, you know, it's hard to say how it will play out. Other questions? Yes.
Is there a resistance from some people in making everything Cornell available to anybody
in the world? Yes. So, I mean, in some cases we can't. Because we have it under license, or we have it under some agreement that restricts our ability. You know, we can only make it available to scholars or whatever. And certainly it's a question, right? If we just push it all out there, how much are we giving up of attracting people here? I do think that our strengths are going to be in the more sort of higher touch, hands-on services for students, for faculty. And so I'm not as reluctant myself to say, yes, let's put it out there and make people aware of it. Ideally, we make them aware that it really is Cornell, so the archive.org one is a nice example. We're trying to make sure that it's closely associated with the Cornell Library, so they know that we're putting the $400,000 a year into it. And we get the sort of recognition that that comes from that. I mean, part of it is sort of visibility and advertising, right? I mean, what funds us is students thinking this is a wonderful place to come and study. And if they're seeing, you know, Cornell resources out there that they find attractive and exciting, that's one way that can happen. Yeah. Other questions? Side group.
Maybe it's also time to
Is it time?
I think that it's time to move on. If there are any more questions, I think, Dean, you may
I'll stick around, sure, if anybody has any.
Thanks to Dean for a great presentation.
Thank you.